Welcome to the 10th and final pre-season Super Coach Coach podcast of the 2015 season. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
I managed to turn up, mate, which must be good news.
We've got some good Essendon Asada news coming right up. Just before we get into tonight, I'd just like to attribute this show to my friend Ian Seat, who passed away a couple of days ago after a sudden and surprising bout with a lung disease that unfortunately has taken his life way, way too early. My thoughts and well wishes go out to his family. Ian was just honestly the nicest guy. I've met him such a long time ago now, and we first started watching footy together in Geelong, and he's the most passionate Cat supporter, wore his heart on his sleeve, which you love to see. And beyond that, he just had an incredible zest for life. He had a lot of integrity as a person, which I think is very important. And honestly, he touched so many lives just with his warmth and his caring. And so this show's for you, Ian, and just to all our audience out there, if anybody's feeling charitable and just a little bit of a thank you to us, I would appreciate just even a dollar. Any little bit will help. He's leaving behind sons age 1 and 3, so that's probably the saddest part about this, is that he has such a young family. So the link will be on the podcast page, and if anyone has a dollar spare, ask if you guys can put your hands in your pockets and help out a fellow Australian. His friends have set up a fundraising group for Aries, Eden, and Liam, and the details will be on the podcast page. So thank you guys for your consideration and your time. And you know, Ian was always a very happy guy, so I'm going to attack this show with as much positivity as I can muster. So remind you guys about our open leagues. Your last chance to join them, of course, before we hit the season proper. The league codes will be on supercoachcoach.com.au, and there'll be quite a few of them there, so jump on there. And our Supercoach Coach group invitation as well. So it's a great way to track basically everybody in our community, because it'll have everybody in our group, hopefully. So make sure you join on to that before the season starts off. And we'll plug our social media before we kick into it. At Supercoach Coach on Twitter and facebook.com/supercoach. Coach, thanks for the huge response over the preseason. And Mark, we did 5,000 downloads on an episode for the first time, that's huge for us. So we're so grateful for the support over the preseason, and hope you've enjoyed it, and hope the rest of 2015 will be as good, Mark.
Yeah, I've seen a few teams from some of our listeners, and they're actually looking pretty good.
You sound surprised. Definitely, they should be looking very good.
So, sounds like they're listening to our advice, and yeah, it's good to see. Bit of a reminder from your story about your friend that despite how big it seems with the Asada decision today, that maybe there's some bigger things in life and we should keep it in perspective a little bit. With that said, it is a bit of a relief this tonight to come on and know that our Bombers are going to be playing this week. My first feelings were overwhelming sadness. I really struggled through the afternoon with that. Starting to move into a bit of a relief, and for the first time since February 2013, I'm actually excited for football this year. I was so excited going into the 2013 season. I really thought the Bombers would do well. We were top of the ladder after 18 rounds in the end, but ever since February of that year, there's just been this overwhelming burden and sadness that has made it really difficult to really love footy. But we're contenders now, like legitimate contenders. Let's go. I'm just sort of excited for that. Other feelings are, I think Gil McLaughlin said it well last week, that we should remember that the players were never accused of intentionally cheating. If they cheated, they were duped, which is really, they've been through enough. If people want to move on from this, then they need to realize that the players have been through hell for the last 2 years. They never, ever deliberately set out to cheat. So I think maybe it is time to just go, okay, they've had their whack. Let's move on. Let's look into the future. Asada's got a lot to be held credit for here, or their lead investigator said over a year ago that they don't have enough proof to go through with the case, and they went ahead anyway. So I think that that's really dragged it out. Some really dodgy stuff happened in the back end of last year. We do have to put that in the past and focus on the games now. Respect levels for James Hurd gone even higher. I'm not sure that I did thought that it could have, but his resilience and ability to just stick with it, and despite everything that's been coming at him from the last couple of years, I'm pretty envious of that. A lot of hate still going around on social media tonight. If people really want to put this behind us, then they've got to accept the tribunal's verdict, know that there was no intention to ever trade from the players. The drug that they're accused of using is TB4. It wasn't as if they're using steroids. It's just time to put it in the past and move on and look at who we can put into our Supercoach team from the Essendon players.
I think it's good that it's over, and I think that most of us, I'd be surprised anybody out there really wanted players to be suspended or punished for the situation. They found themselves in a terrible position and unfortunately dragged out. So it's great to see that all done with. And, you know, Mark, like you said, hopefully everybody moves on and we don't need to talk about it anymore. And I think, you know, that includes all the fine details of, you know, whether or not AFL or Asada in the wrong, like properly moving on means none of that. Everything's in the past because the blame's been shed all over the place and media's been pointing too many fingers, probably stirring up some stuff. So glad to have it all over, Mark. More pressingly for Supercoach, like you said, Heppel, Watson, Hibbard, Tommy Bellchambers. They're the four guys on my list that I've written off completely and that I'm willing to now consider the 11th hour. So Hibbard, for one, we locked right at the start of the preseason. Mark, what do you reckon about these four blokes? How many do you have in your team?
I have two of them, mate, and they've been the two that were there at the start of the preseason in Hibbard and Bellchambers. I think I'm a little bit concerned with Hibbard that we don't have any exposed form from the NAB, and just all reports are that he's fit, but it would have been nice to see him have a run around. Heppel has had a bit of a knee injury where he had to go in and get some clean-up surgery during the preseason, so he's supposed to be fit for round one, and he could break out, but as I've discussed previously, not going to pick him this year. And Bellchambers, I think, is an absolute lock at 300,000. I expect him to be a number one ruck, and I'm hoping that we go in with him and Joey doing the ruck this year rather than Giles. So, and if that happens, for sure, I think he should be a lock for everyone.
So we do have a follow-on from that. Steve or Bleeder80 from Twitter says, TBC, a lock, like you just said, Mark, but will you play him in your forward line or will you play him in your rucks? So we have talked about this before. Where are you sitting right now before lockout?
Just before lockout, it's the first time in a long time that I've actually moved him back into my forward line. I know that there's lots of really good forward line options this year, but there's also a few really good ruck options this year. I think that at the start of the preseason, we're a bit more unsure of the rucks, but they look like they're going to score okay. And there's sort of the Goldstein, Marek, Nick Nat. I'd really like to pick two of those guys if I can. So pretty tempted to have him in the forward line. I know a lot of people will be putting him as their second ruck. I think, yeah, he also, the fact that he adds a little bit of cover in case of injury and a bit of flexibility to the team, I like that aspect of it.
I have him at the moment in my rucks, Mark, and I think I like the value there, but equally happy with him in the forward line because there you actually have active cover. So for me, I think both are decent options, and pretty much agree with your thoughts on Bellchambers, Mark. I like the mid-price options in the rucks, and we've been talking about not being able to find a guy. And now that the Asada cloud's lifted, you know, we've got a guy. So yeah, big on him. Heppel and Watson then. I assume you like them, but just amongst the plethora of midfield options, they don't quite make the cut. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, absolutely. And our midfield is probably a bit deeper than maybe it has been in the last few years with Zaharakis and Myers improving. You've got Cooney and Goddard to go in there, Chappie. You've got reasonably deep rotation, so maybe the points might be shared a little bit more this year than when Job was just sort of able to take all of the points.
So for the rest of the show, Mark, now we're down with all the Asada and Essendon update, is do we pick Gary Ablett or not? And we've got an update from Rocket E that we're going to get into. But then after that, we're going to go through positionally, Mark, and we're going to hit up all the rookies. So the show you've been waiting for, I know everybody's keen to lock those rookies away before Thursday. Of course, as we record this, Mark, we don't actually have teams. So we'll be speculating a little bit as to who we think will get in or out. But you know, it's our best guess at this very moment. And so we'll be doing that positionally. And of course, we've taken your questions from social media. Huge response this week, obviously. Lots on the mind at the last minute, so thank you all for your questions. So we'll start, Mark, Ablett or not? Where do you sit right at this moment?
Sure. So Ablett, when we found out that he was in doubt for round one and the rumours were he couldn't lift his arm up above his shoulder, went out of my team pretty quickly. And so it's been out for quite a while, and I quite liked just the whole idea about being able to play with a team that didn't have someone over 700,000. It really added almost an extra whole premium into your team. So yeah, it was quite good. But just the news of the last couple of weeks, I think that at 730,000, if he's going to play round one, and it is Ablett, he is an exceptional talent that I think that he could start pretty well. And so he sort of snuck back into my team in the last week just with more positive news about his injury. I mean, he's been able to do all the running and kicking, so that means that he's probably in reasonable nick. It's just sort of the strength around the shoulder. So, yeah, he's actually in at the moment. I can still understand why people would leave him out, but I think by the time lockout comes around, there's going to be a bit of a move back towards Ablett.
It's been brewing for a while, obviously, this cold feet. And, yeah, with Rocket Eid pretty much declaring he'll start round one, kind of move back to him as well. We'll move on to a question from Nath Vanders about an option for Ablett if you do decide not to go with him, Mark. Rockcliffe or Pendles? Which of the two do you prefer?
Not even a contest. Pendles. Rocky is just too expensive at his current price based on one, like, super elite season. He was awesome last year. I can't imagine anyone other than Ablett being able to do that two seasons in a row. So I expect him to drop maybe 10 points in average, so still average around the 120 mark, but drop a fair bit. I think we've worked out all the players that had averaged over 130 in a season in the last 10 years, other than Ablett, have only ever done it once in their careers and never ever averaged over 120 after that. So it'd have to be a really, really exceptional season from Rockcliffe. And I think that's what we had last year. I think that the beams coming into the midfield, the fact that Brisbane don't have much of a forward line to kick to, and Rocky is such a strong forward and he's a really good footy player down there, means that he's probably going to spend a little bit more time up there, which is going to affect his average. On the flip side of that, Pendles is actually a bit underpriced, I think. He had a shoulder injury, I think, for the last 11 or 12 rounds last year, so was able to play but not perform up to his usual standards. So that means he's probably got a bit of value and a bit underpriced. I know Collingwood look like they might suck a bit this year, which could impact his price a bit. And with Beams gone, he could get a little bit more attention, but I expect him to average high 120s again. It just seems like, with the discount compared to Rocky, a much, much safer pick.
I would have Pendles ahead. I've not really been too hot on Rockley the entire time. I don't know if I'd have it quite hands down, so that was the part I was more surprised at, Mark, but you brought up some very compelling arguments there. So being on the Pendlebury bandwagon, obviously agree.
It was interesting the other night, Marcus, we did our highly competitive draft league, and Pendles went at number two, Rocky went at one, and you picked up Ablett with pick three.
Yeah, that's correct. So the three guys we just talked about, and Ablett coming last, Mark, is that a sign for this season?
I think it was just a durability concern, and the Pendles is the most, potentially the most reliable pick out of the three.
And we also had a Brisbane fan picking first, so a bit of good luck. I'm pretty happy to have Ablett, Mark. We'll move on positionally now, mate, and we'll talk about these rookies, hey? In the back line first, who are your two prime rookies that you like a step above the rest, and then who would you have as sort of your contenders?
We've spoken about Nathan Brown a fair bit on the show. It's a little bit more expensive. I think everyone should have Brett Goods in your team if he's named around one. And Adam Saad is the obvious next rookie. It's really after Brown and Saad, who do you possibly pick after that? That's really the issue. There's been a few contenders. Those fringe Bombers boys are probably ruled out now, the Dalgleish and Edwards types. You're looking at Hamling, McIntosh and Oxley, I think, are probably the three standout candidates. Geez, you could flip a coin between all of those three. It'd have to be a three-sided coin, but I really don't know who I'm leaning towards. If McIntosh is named and not the sub, probably him. Otherwise, probably Oxley and then Hamling.
They all do seem to be pretty poor options, Mark. And based off that, how many rookies are you actually looking at? And what would you be recommending? What's the range?
Sure. So my opinion on that probably hasn't changed for quite a long time, and that is that I would pick three of them, one of them on the ground. Yeah, I think that you can still take a gamble on that player and that Brown or Saad is going to score well enough to sit on your field.
That's probably the safest and most sensible configuration. I think people going with four down back, I don't think that's too crazy. Just acknowledge the fact that you might have 260s on field, but if it works structurally for you, it's not like the midfield options are on fire instead this year. Normally, you'd hate to take 60s, but apart from Clark and Saylor, Mark up forward, and I think as we'll get through the show, there really doesn't seem to be too many high-scoring options that don't have premium price tags attached to them.
Yeah, but there's always rookies that really surprise you when you get into the season.
Absolutely true. All right, we'll move to some questions about the backline players now then. Tim Lee is asking about Cade Simpson. Is he still a lock? Or is there better value elsewhere? Seems like a lot of people have jumped off him. When we did the backline show, Mark, we did talk up his consistency and reliability.
I'm seeing Hodge is like really, really popular amongst the public. I think Simpson's probably a better pick than Hodge. After having Hodge last year, he has some big games in him, but he plays roles a lot and is probably struggles with his durability, whereas Simpson is probably a bit stronger in that area. He's never been in my side, so I certainly wouldn't say he's a lock.
not a lock for me, but still think he's a pretty good pick. On to the next question, and it's from at Nathan2976. Interested in your thoughts on Goods and his job security under a new Dogs coach. So, Mark, you just mentioned him before. Absolute lock.
If he's named one round one on the ground, put him in your team. He has the potential to average premium numbers. He's 240,000. There's not many good rookies around. He did win the best on ground medal in the VFL grand final last year. Was just out of favour with the previous coach. Had a great preseason. Dropped a bit of weight. Playing more midfield than backline this year. Plenty of good reasons to put him in your team.
Plenty of upside that the risk on job security is not worth. Considering then.
Please talk about the downside. I don't want to talk him up too much.
I think I actually agree with you, Mark. Just lack of options. I'm almost having him in lock status at this point. Next question is from MartinWalsh06. What scoring output do you expect from a 200 to 300K player to make them a viable selection? So there's the most of these types in the back line this year. What do you reckon they need to score in order to make them viable? 70, 80?
I think it's a really, really tricky question. And seeing as you probably have more inclination towards them at the moment, I'm probably more interested in your perspective, mate.
I think if they can score 70, I think that that's a pretty decent win considering the options are poor this year. The no rookies and the premiums are going to tread water as well. So if you can get a guy who will go up to an average of 70 and you can pick up a fallen premium for the price of 70 in the back line, which is possible, that's a straight swap. So yeah, I think that they could work out quite well. And, you know, there's obviously more breathing room to move in the back line because they don't have to hit as high an average to achieve an upgrade. And so I think a scoring output of 70, you'd be pretty happy.
I'd be pretty shattered with 70, mate. I'd really be looking at the 75 to 80 range to get close to keeper scores so that they could be late upgrades. I think if you can get a rookie that's going to score you 50 versus a $270,000 player that's going to score you 70, I think I'd take the rookie and use the money elsewhere in your team. I think you could probably get those points somewhere else more effectively. And because they're going to require trades, I think that I really like McMillan. I think that moving into the leadership group, before last year he had really good durability. His scoring looks like that 75 to 80. There's plenty of really good things about him, but that's just not ever going to be enough to really straight swap to a premium or justify a position as a permanent player in my back line. So I just can't make the jump to pick them.
That's fair, Mark, and I'm absolutely tossing that up at the moment. I do think that scoring 70 from one 200K to 300K player is perfectly all right. You probably just don't want to have too many of them, and I wouldn't say I'd be shattered, especially considering the backline's options are just so terrible. Like it really isn't too bad to be able to side swap a guy who started at peanuts and that costs you very, very little risk for a premium. You can't do that in any other line. Anyway, we'll move on to the midfield now and to the rookies there, Mark. So obviously we've got the most selection there. We've got a bench three deep. So looking for some real cash generation. Maybe job security is less important this year than in previous. Who would you say are your top contenders? I think Patrick Cripps is pretty high on mine at the moment, despite his high price tag.
Yeah, I think that his preseason numbers are just too good to resist. I think that pretty much every team would have Alice Yeoman in it. If Heaney's named round one, he'll be in all the teams. Tuke Miller from Gold Coast will also be in most teams if named round one. Jed Anderson, if named and not the sub, he'll probably be in a lot of teams. And if Kane Lambert gets a game, he'll also be in a lot of teams. One of the things I've noticed this preseason is, especially probably those six guys, seeing them in almost all teams, there seems to be a lot more agreement on which midfield rookies are a good idea this year than there's probably been in the past. And I think maybe because there's less players to choose from and they don't seem so exciting, or there's less of a ceiling available.
For the guys who are a little bit more of a question, let's just talk through them so that people considering them know the potential downsides. Mm-hmm. So Ben Newton's the first one, and obviously it's just because he's quite expensive, but he's come over from Port Adelaide and people are looking at his potential upside being attractive. Do you think he probably tips toward a no in terms of the point value scale?
I think it depends a little bit on your midfield structure, and if you're only going three or four midfield premiums, then I would probably be inclined to start two of these $200,000 guys, so Cripps being one, then looking between Newton, Van Berlo and Sheed. I think Newton's probably been a little bit underrated based on his preseason scores. He could go either way. He could be a Viv Michie, or he could be closer to a Dom Tyson. I think that really unsure about Newton because he does have really high scoring potential. Didn't really show that during the preseason. Yeah, I think that he's not a terrible pick and could definitely work out. He hasn't been in my team for a while, but yeah, I can see why people would pick him.
Aaron Vandenberg, Mark, he played all three games and we're looking at him actually coming in, making a good impact and being that cheap player. But unfortunately, it doesn't look like he'll make round one at this stage.
I think that the rookies had to be upgraded by today. I'm not 100% sure on that. And I was a bit distracted today by some other big news. So I'm not sure whether that happened, but I don't think it did.
Blaine Bokhorst looks like he's fallen out of favor. MVB is probably a big one to talk about, Mark. Really dropped out of consideration.
I'm really confused. I feel like maybe I'm wrong with Van Berlo. I mean, he's averaged 80-plus a few times in the past. Brad Crouch going down, maybe there's more of a role for him in the midfield. He's not tagging, so he's running freer this year. His preseason scores just weren't up to scratch, and he had plenty of time on ground for it. Adelaide have a really good draw. I kind of feel like he was such a lock early on that maybe his preseason scores were deceptive and that I'm wrong. I have my concerns regarding Van Berlo because I'm not going to start him. Yeah, I think he could potentially burn me a little bit.
I'm probably not too worried about being burnt, and that's why I'm comfortable leaving him out. I suppose if I was worried about that, I guess I'd probably lean toward picking him just because I don't know if the options are the huge anyway. So, but my read is that I don't think that he'll be too damaging a player anyway. I don't think he's shown that to be the case in the past. And so, yeah, I'm pretty okay to leave him out at this stage.
The other player at about 200,000 in competition with Van Berlo would be Dom Sheed. Averaged about 70 in the preseason. I could definitely see him doing that over the regular season. It was a sub a lot last year. That's why he's only 214,000. Was participating in 10 games. Yeah, West Coast have a really good draw. I think that he could challenge Cripps for better average this year. I think that they could potentially be interchangeable. Sheed was a lot more dominant in scoring as a junior than Cripps was. So, yeah, I think that he's an interesting pick. And if I wasn't starting many midfield premiums, he would also come into consideration.
And a lot of people starting maybe even forwards and midfielders. So, yeah, it does seem like these expensive guys are getting pushed out. Akers is another one that's expensive as well. And he's got a low scoring ceiling probably heading into 2015. So you're going to spend that amount, Mark's mentioned, to better guys. Angus Brayshaw, Mark, we have has a question about him.
26 touches in the reserve the other day. Looked really good, apparently. The fact that he hasn't been able to play any other senior games in the preseason probably has me concerned a little bit. There's potential that he is the best of a lot of them and will have the best season out of a lot of them if he can stay fit and build on his fitness and avoid the sub vest. Be interesting to see how Melbourne manage his first season, seeing as Petrarca's not there. They probably won't want to overplay Brayshaw, but he did manage some huge numbers as a junior and has some serious talent. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him turn out to even better than the other three $200,000 players we've mentioned.
To round off the midfield rookies, Mark, got a question from Alistair Campbell. Bit of a point of difference, but what are your thoughts on Jackson Nelson, 117K rookie from West Coast who played all three NAB games and could be playing some games with all the injury and retirement issues at the Eagles? What do you reckon, Mark?
Yeah, Simpson said that he's going to play at least in the first month if he's not named round one. Preseason scores weren't overly flash with 61, 33 and 37 from 71% time on ground. So, yeah, even if you might get games, you'd probably be stretching it to pick him just because of his low scoring.
We'll move on to a question from Jackson Jones now about Callan Ward. Do you reckon he's a good point of difference selection, Mark? Considering Griffin will now normally cop the tag, Ward's only in 2.8% of teams. And Mark actually picked Callan Ward as a bit of a POD a while ago when Ward crossed over to GWS. Isn't that right, Mark?
Yeah, that was quite a while ago, mate. I kind of didn't expect him to become such an awesome player. Last season, he was amazing, and his ability to impact games, I really didn't quite expect him to become that much of a elite talent. But look, I think this year is not the year to pick Callum Ward. That's a really good point that you made with Griffin coming across and that taking a bit of a tag away from Ward. Not that Ward copped the tag every week last year. Did have some huge games, but I just think that it's going to be really interesting going forward with the Giants midfield, because you would expect that one or two of them are going to be elite premiums at some stage. But there's just so many of them. You've got Dylan Scheel, Toby Green, Coniglio, Kelly, Griffin, Ward, Treloar. They're seven insanely good players that could all be premiums if they weren't all in the same team together. Mm. But at some point, if they're all playing together, they have to share points a little bit. They can't all score ridiculously high. So I think that that worries me a little bit with Ward, and Ward might be a bit more of a role player for them, using his elite talent still, but I don't think that he's going to sort of advance on his 112 average from last year.
We'll move on now to the Rucks and talk about the rookies first. Who do you actually like down there? Do you think anyone's going to get games? Or are you picking for the ruck forward loophole, or are you picking for the emergency loophole? How are you deciding?
I want to ruck forward because I'm going to start Bell Chambers up forward more than likely, or like I at least want that option later on. So that's where I'm going to go. And Reed from Geelong, I think his name is, seems to have the best draw in the first half of the year to be used as a loophole player. But I think I'm probably going to take Riley O'Brien from the Crows because he played a little bit in the preseason. So I know Loudon has an Achilles injury that he's struggling with. If Jacobs did potentially go down, then he might actually get a game, which would just be a huge bonus. And he also can play as a key position player as well. So potential there that he could actually play. And I'd like that as an incentive to pick him, considering he's reasonably good for the loophole as well as Reed. But I do seem to stuff up my ruck rookies pretty much every year, so don't listen to me.
I think that's the main thing I'd stress is go for a rookie ruck forward. That just opens up your options. If you want to swap for a ruckman because one of your guys are injured, if you need to do that at the last minute because somebody's been in a late withdrawal on a Saturday afternoon, you can swap a forward into your rucks that way. If you don't start a ruck forward in your third ruck position, you just can't do that. So I think it's a big mistake not to do that, especially if there's no specific option that's presenting for games and value. We'll mention the others that people are thinking about. Andrew Phillips is a good chance for quite a few games this season. There's talk that he'll play as a second fiddle on a semi-permanent basis, depending on the needs of the team, but that it'll happen quite a bit throughout the season. He's more expensive, though.
Low scoring potential and too expensive.
And then we've got Jonathan Griffin, who's obviously a backup option, but he's also very expensive.
Agreed.
Sam Naismith, also expensive and also a backup option.
I would have him potentially ahead of Griffin just because he's that bit cheaper and Pike has been less than convincing in the ruck last year.
Alrighty then. We'll move on to the forward line now. And again, we'll start off at the rookies. We talked about Clark and Salem plenty. They're locks. Locks, locks, locks.
Locks. Massive locks.
Who would you go with next, Mark, for your two bench spots? Or would you even think about playing three forward rookies, considering we have two absolute locks?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, mate. And I have toyed around with that side, and I've seen some teams with that structure that have looked really, really good. So yeah, there probably is enough rookies that you've got there. I think the standouts are probably Hogan, Lambert, Lamb, and Caleb Daniel. That between those four, you should be able to find three that are pretty decent. I'm not really sold on their reliability or scoring ability necessarily, so that probably makes me go back to trying to get those two of those guys onto the bench. I think Jesse Hogan's a lock. Just the talent there, the fact that he averaged 96 in the VFL and won their best and fairest. That was a couple of years ago. I think that's a really good sign for his potential at AFL. Not that he's going to average 96, but just that I know that he's going to struggle being their number one forward, but he's going to have some good games as well. So job security should be very high. I guess Lambert, Lamb, and Daniel all probably fringe best 22. Could be sub-candidates as well. So you'll just have to wait for team sheets for those guys. If there was enough midfield rookies and you could get Lambert into your forward line, that'd probably be pretty good because that gives you a bit of extra flexibility with dual position players. What are your thoughts, mate?
Roughly agree with that. Yeah, like you said, Hogan is a real standout, even though that he doesn't show great scoring potential. Like we talked with Cockatoo, these guys who are supremely talented, all it takes is one big game to really lift their average. One of my first big mistakes calling Supercoach and giving out advice actually was related to a rookie with high scoring potential, Mark, and that's Stephen Hill. At the start, I said that Hill was probably overpriced. He had really terrible scoring history, and I told people to trade him out. People who traded him out really, really regretted it because he went on to just pump out some randomly huge games on the end of the season and deliver really good results. So Hogan's definitely a player that, even though he doesn't seem like he can do it at the moment, it just takes one big game and his price will shoot straight up. So definitely agree with you there, Mark. Jack Loney, we haven't talked about him.
I should have mentioned him as well, mate. Seems like he is pretty likely to line up for round one for the Saints.
Yeah, he's going to play up at the half forward, so play as a link-up player, which is better as a forward than playing deep in the forward line of a poor team. I don't expect huge scores, but he's priced 117 anyway, and job security, like you said, Mark, looks pretty decent.
So out of Lamb from West Coast, Caleb Daniel from the Doggies, or Loney, which one are you taking?
I reckon most talent goes to Lamb, and therefore I'd go with him, I think.
Yep, I'm at the same point. I can see the others potentially working out better, though, but yep. Yeah, he would be my preference too.
Hugh Goddard, Mark, we didn't actually mention him. He's a defender and a forward. Doesn't look like he's going to start, although he played most of the preseason games. Unfortunately, might not get a berth in the round one team.
Yeah, I think that's a bit disappointing for the Saints. I think that they should just get him in there. Probably not quite as talented as Michael Hurley, but reminds me a little bit of him with the aggressiveness and determination. And yeah, I would have really liked to have him in my team and watch him play, but doesn't look like he's going to get a gig straight up. Hopefully he's a downgrade option.
Ahmed Saad, Mark, coming back from his suspension.
A bit more expensive, probably as a small forward for St Kilda. Going to really, really struggle to average more than 50, so that would be a no.
We've seen him do that before as well, Mark, so on exposed form as well. Move on to some questions now. In the forward line, Mitchell Bird or MitchBird95 from Twitter asking about Gray and whether or not he's overpriced given the difficult opening fixture. So talked about him before, but just in relation to the fixture, are you concerned about that?
Yes, I am. Gray is proving to be a very stressful decision. I haven't been able to lock him in or out of my team all preseason. I think his talent is supreme. Their draw's only actually bad for the first 4 weeks, and then it does open up a little bit. So, I mean, you're not going to be trading him in after 4 weeks, and so you're going to miss some of those easy games. The fact that he scored 160 in a preseason game has me severely worried. There's only so many spots in my team, and I'm not sure that I can justify him at his current price.
Yeah, Mark, he's still in my team at the moment. There's potential he's underpriced, so that's just how I'd counter that, is that, yes, he's definitely potential to be overpriced, but... Yeah, same potential to be underpriced, and it's a risk-reward pick. You know what you're getting into. You can either go with Mark and say, there's good enough options, I don't need to spend the money there, I don't need to take the risk, or you could say, I'm going for the risk, I'm just going to do it. So I don't think either is a poor decision, and that's what makes it so stressful, probably, Mark.
I know some really good coaches that think he's an absolute lock, and that concerns me a little bit, seeing as he's not in my team.
Thanks, Mark. I didn't know you thought about that like that.
Definitely wasn't talking about you.
Oh, God, just had to ruin a good moment. It's having a tough day. All right, Clint Stott's question next. Swan or Bennell? And this come up quite a bit, Mark. And considering we started off the preseason with this, how apt is that that we've landed back on this topic? Swan or Bennell, Mark?
Mate, did you listen to last week's podcast?
Yeah. Still got more questions.
What was my opinion then, mate?
Still not changing.
No way. Like, I was tempted to pick Swan at number 10 in our draft league. I took Goldstein in the end, but I was very tempted to pick Swan.
How about this? I got a better response, Mark. Pick both. Just fit both in. Definitely.
Ooh,
fit
actually, both in. Look at my team. I do have both.
Yeah, I think they're locks ahead of most of the other mid forwards. So if you're asking one or the other, cut whatever other dude that you have and put them both in. Like
whatever other dude that is, if it's Robbie Gray. Or...
I don't care. Put them in. Yeah, ahead of Gray. Those two, lock. Big fans. Next question is from David and Geisler from Twitter, or Hondo, as we know him on the forum. Thanks for your question, Hondo. Who to leave out of Bartel, Dusty, Swan, Bennell, and Gray? Now, I added one more to that because I think that he's as competitive in that group, Delidio. He's been dropped out in and out of the preseason, but I think, you know, over the course of the preseason, he well and truly deserves to be held in that same regard.
I have absolutely no idea how you split these six guys. I want them all. I'm probably going to take three or four of them. I know at different times I've had as many as five of them in my team. I'm finding that Swan's an absolute lock. I'm finding that I can't put Bartel out of my team. I just can't drop him for some reason. I'm thinking that extra midfield time at Geelong, for some reason, I believe the coach and I believe you, Marcus. I have faith in you, and I just can't take him out of my team. So, yeah, I think that they're all awesome picks, and just pick whichever ones you like.
I'm going to stick my neck out there a little bit and go, I reckon, and this is considering price as well, Bartel, Swan, Bennell is... I just really like those three. Gray, it's either a lock or you avoid him. And then after that, I'd have Dusty and Delidio, probably the lower of two. And I'd have Dusty a bit of Delidio. So I guess to answer Hondo's original question, I'd leave Dusty out, Mark.
It's crazy.
But I like Gray. So if you don't like Gray, then there's a good reason to leave Gray out and not take the overpriced play as some people would see it.
Don't mischaracterize what I said. There's no point did I say that I don't like Gray.
just saying, really if other people, not you. I know you like Gray. That's all right. Don't worry. Not putting words in your mouth, Mark.
I really think that these guys are all awesome picks.
Yeah. Yeah, agree with you, Mark, and that's what makes this so hard, and some people are thinking about putting him into their midfield, which is a question that we're getting to now. James DeSellis on Facebook wants to know, with the amount of these options that are so attractive, can I put one of them at my midfield? And, you know, is that crazy considering that the options in the midfield are bona fides for 110, 115?
I did have that structure for a while in the preseason, and I really like that structure. And I had that structure up until bringing Ablett back into my team in the last couple of days. So, yeah, I think it's a great move and could pay handsome rewards given how much value there is with those strong forwards this year.
I think personal preference, you're picking between a forward and a midfielder, and just whatever you prefer. Like, either way you're picking, they're bona fide to be in the top 22 averaging players, and that's probably the more critical thing. They both meet that. Bontempelli is the last guy that we're talking about, and he's just been mentioned so much, and fair enough too, because every time you watch the guy, you're just like, whoa. But we've talked about it before. There's just so many options, and we just spent about all this time stressing about which we actually want to pick. Based off that, surely we cannot pick him.
Yeah, that's exactly the reasons, mate. I think he's going to be a bit up and down. He should get plenty of midfield time, but the fact that we saw 93, 62, and 132 in the preseason, I think that might be a fairly accurate representation of his scoring. Bulldogs aren't going to be awesome this year. They're going to have some good moments and some good games because of all the talent on that list, but they're also going to struggle in some games, which is going to affect his scoring capacity. And in a normal year, at just over 400,000, he represents a ton of value and would be an awesome pick, but I don't see how I could leave any of those six midfielders that we talked about out of my team for Bontempelli.
Absolutely.
In second season.
Next and last question, Mark. A general question from Cameron Lockhead. How much is a good amount to leave in bank? So I thought it's a good one to end with. What's your recommendation there for the new coaches that don't know about bank strategy?
I remember there was a season a few years ago where so everyone had Reigns as a defender for about 250,000 or something, and he went down like in the first quarter of the first game against Carlton, and we all had to trade him out. And the options were Hearn and Gilbert, and I'd only left probably 10 grand in the bank, so I could only afford Hearn. But a lot of people took Gilbert, and Hearn did okay, but Gilbert was a standout pick that season. And so I've always sort of had the impression after that I want to save about 30,000 in the bank as a good buffer in case something like that happens. I think it just gives you more options in case something doesn't go your way, and with correcting, like say you need to correct a rookie that's only 105,000, but you keep 5,000 in the bank, that's going to leave you with almost no options. So yeah, I like to try to leave myself a bit of wiggle room. Anywhere up to 50,000, I think, is reasonable. If I start seeing more than 50, then I'm probably looking for somewhere to spend some of that cash.
Bank is really important to take in the season just because you need options. And we all recommend two corrective trades, basically. Even if your team's quite good, you normally try and find some sort of opportunity you can jump on before prices change, because surely there's some sort of prediction that you didn't see that you can now gain advantage from. And you want to have those options with a little bit of cash to spare when that time comes around, and that's the exact reason. And Mark's very good example of when that was a huge, huge point in the season. I remember too, Mark, I was on Hearn, and that was the difference between coming in, you know, top 500 and outside of the 5,000. Like, it's a huge difference. It was a big move, so absolutely agree. People definitely need to be less concerned with spending all and maxing out all that value, because sometimes staying flexible is definitely a good thing heading into the season. And I would argue that you're better off having the best team you could possibly have after round two trades as compared to having the best team possible at the start of round one.
Good advice, mate.
Yeah. On to the last question, Mark, and just to send us off. Everybody has 50-50 calls, Tono reckons, with their starting teams. After a long summer of planning and analysis, what's the last thing you're tossing up, Mark?
I think it's just been the same points over and over again for about a month. There's one spot in my midfield, there's one spot in my defense, there's one spot in my forward line, and one spot in my rocks that's up for grabs. So, look, obviously the rookies will be the last thing that gets finalized, but just finding the exact balance I want across those four players has just been probably the only real thing that's been cycling through my team for quite a while.
For me, it's probably similar to a lot of people out there. It's the back line. I've got questions whether or not I go with a spread of cheaper options in the 200 to 300k range, or whether or not, you know, I go for more expensive guys there. Basically deciding just exactly how much money to spend on those mid prices. I'm still struggling with that category a little bit.
Sounds like you've listened to my advice from the Defenders show and more mid prices.
Yes, and to be honest, those midfield premiums, when I chucked them back into my team, I went, what am I doing? What am I doing staring at all these backline premiums? Give me my Pendlebury's and my five. So yeah. I've went back to you, Mark. I've went back with you. All right, that wraps up a good show and a fantastic preseason, Mark. Most fun one yet.
Yeah, it's been a long one, mate. And if the listeners out there that have appreciated the content over 10 long episodes and that have picked awesome teams as a result, I really want to support you in trying to support your friends' family that's just passed away. So if you have enjoyed the content and you do think that you've gained something out of it, if you could chuck us a couple of bucks through the site, Marcus will put up the link and support someone that really is in need. That'd be great payment for us and we'd really appreciate that. We have put in a lot of work over this preseason for you guys.
Thanks for that, Mark. It's always sad to hear those stories, and anytime you can help out your fellow man, I reckon. Again, no pressure, but just thanks for your consideration, guys, and thanks for an awesome preseason. Mark, thanks for being an awesome partner. Super pumped. Look at these numbers and the engagement. Very, very, very happy, Mark. And with that, all the best for season 2015. We hit lockout. Woo!
Bombers have their best 22 playing. Oh my God, I'm so excited. I kind of feel like I should have gone a bit harder on the decision today. I've got a bit more anger in me than I did show in my spiel at the start.
He tamed it, guys. He tamed it. Don't worry. We'll let them know that at least. All the best, guys, this week, and we'll catch you again for round one. See ya.
See ya.
Let's get crazy.